whenever we're dealing with life and doing things, a lot of times when I talk with teenagers, point out that, hey, you're going to start a job and you're not going to do things perfectly. You're going to get criticism. And you know what? That's true also for preachers. I have a friend who's a fellow preacher I've corresponded with for quite a few years now. And one time he wrote to me, he was concerned about how to address a certain problem that came up. He had recently contacted a man who had been in a preacher's training program. And he had moved into this area a few months prior. And interestingly, the man had been in the area before and tried out to preach for this particular congregation where this man's preaching for several years before. But in the meantime, the man's been worshiping with a very liberal congregation, but said that he was confused because the people in his current congregation say that the one that my friend was preaching at was wrong. And the people in the training program tells him that the place he's currently worshiping at is wrong. And as the congregation conversation progressed, he told the preacher that he shouldn't be in the building studying. He should be out on the streets preaching in the public and traveling around the world. He told the preacher that he wasn't doing his job. So the preacher had asked me if I had some material on some of those subjects that they had discussed. And I got the impression that what the man had said to him really cut him personally. The accusation that he wasn't doing his job. And so I want us to consider the idea of criticism. Criticism can be beneficial when it comes from wise people. For instance, in Psalms 41 and in verse 5, 141, I said 41. Psalms 141 and in verse 5 says, let the righteous smite me in kindness and reprove me. It is oil upon the head. Do not let my head refuse it, for still my prayer is against their wicked deeds. David welcomed correction from the righteous. He said that was like an anointing. It was oil upon his head. It was satisfying. Because the righteous doesn't just cut. He's considering what he's trying to say and how to improve the person. In Proverbs chapter 15, and look at verse 28. The heart of the righteous ponders how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil things. And with his words, the righteous person instructs. He improves the person. He builds that person up. Again in Proverbs, this time in Proverbs 15 and verse 23, it says, a man has joy in an apt answer, and how delightful is a timely word. Criticism is basically a beautiful thing. It's appropriate. Even when you're being rebuked, it's something to take pleasure in, even though it might smart at the moment. In Proverbs 25 and in verse 11, like apples of gold and settings of silver is a word spoken in the right circumstance. It can be as beautiful as a picture. Now, criticism is typically well-meaning when it comes from friends. enemies will kiss up to you to disguise their intentions. Going to Proverbs 27, look at verse 5. Better is open rebuke than love that is concealed. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. See, friendship doesn't preclude telling things that we might not want to hear. That's basically what a friend is for, is to help you see things that you might not really want to face. Because the friend wants you to improve. The friend wants you to be a better person. Parents do the same thing. Parents have to, at times, punish their children because they want their children to grow up to be good people and they want them to be safe. Take a look at what the Hebrew writer says in Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12 and in verse 6. For those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines, and he scourges every son whom he receives. For it is for discipline that you endure. God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? But if you are without discipline, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. A good parent disciplines their children. They'll scold them, they'll punish them, because not because they take any joy in it, because they want that child to be better. Friends are those who want you to be better people. Now, still it hurts to have the truth come from a friend. And there's a danger that the wounded will turn on those who actually love him. In fact, Paul talks about this in Galatians chapter 4 and verse 16. Galatians chapter 4, verse 16. He asked the Galatians, have I become your enemies by telling you the truth? He had to tell them things that they really didn't want to hear. They had been straying off the path. He had to correct them. You know, Zechariah, like many of the prophets, lost his life because he was trying to warn his people to follow God. Take a look at 2 Chronicles 24. 2 Chronicles 24 and in verse 20. Then the Spirit of God came upon Zechariah, the son of Jehoiada, the priest. And he stood above the people and said to them, thus God has said, why do you transgress the commandments of the Lord and do not prosper? Because you have forsaken the Lord. He has also forsaken you. So they conspired against him. And at the command of the king, they stoned him to death in the courts of the house of the Lord. Thus Joash, the king, did not remember the kindness which his father Jehoiada had shown him, but he murdered his son. And as he died, he said, may the Lord see and avenge. See, only a friend cares about you enough to brave the wrath, the sneers, the tears that are likely to first come when a friend is corrected. We need to realize that. But we also need to realize that all criticism is not alike. We do need to consider the source. Of course, our aim is not to be pleasing people. Our aim is to be pleasing God. In 1 Thessalonians, chapter 2 and verse 4. But just as we have been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, so we speak not as pleasing men, but God who examines our hearts. Now, many people would be pleased with somebody who's trying to follow after what God says. But it will never, ever be all people. Because not everyone wants to follow God. Now, I want you to think about something. Have you noticed who does the booing at ball games? It's not the fellow players on the team. They made their own mistakes and are not inclined to boo their fellow players when he makes his mistakes. Players are pulling for each other and yelling encouragements. They understand they win or lose as a team. They suffer as a team. They rejoice as a team. It's the spectators who are doing the criticizing, not the participants. You know, the same is true in congregations. There are spectators and there are participants. The spectators don't teach Bible classes. They're not involved in the preaching, the visiting, the teaching, neighbors, leading singing, or getting involved in much of anything. But they're usually the ones who will criticize the preacher, the teacher, and the other participants. They're the ones who make claims to be embarrassed when someone makes an error in his efforts to lead the group. R.L. James once noted, he said, "Have you ever noticed that the members of the church who attend the fewest services know the least about the Bible? They gripe the most, kick the most, work the least, and stand the least chance of getting to heaven." And that's typically true. That's what I've seen over the years. But you don't find that among people who are participating. Do they make mistakes? Yes. But I understand. I made mistakes. I'm sure Ray has made a few mistakes. I'm not going to criticize people for making mistakes because I've been there. Instead, those who are participating should be encouraging. They're sympathetic to one another. Take a look at Romans chapter 12. Romans chapter 12 and in verse 9. "Let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Give preference to one another in honor. Not lagging behind in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, preserving in tribulation, devoted to prayer, contributing to the needs of the saints, practicing hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice, and weep with those who weep. Be of the same mind toward one another. Do not be haughty in mind, but associate with the lowly. Do not be wise in your own estimation." When someone fails, those who are active in participating, they feel for the other's failure. And so they help pick him up and encourage him to try again. Take a look at Romans 14 in verse 7. "For not one of us lives for himself, and not one dies for himself. For if we live, we live for the Lord, or if we die, we die for the Lord. Therefore, whether we live or die, we are the Lord's." Now, jumping down to verse 13. "Therefore, let us not judge one another anymore, but rather determine this, not to put an obstacle or a stumbling block in a brother's way." Too often, we work around the demands of the spectators instead of the needs of the participants. But a proper congregation functions as Paul told the Ephesians in Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians 4 and verse 31. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you, along with all malice. Be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving each other, just as God in Christ also has forgiven you. Have you thought about it? If you wanted financial advice, would you go ask one of those, you know, homeless guys who are sitting on the corner with a sign out saying, want money? And yet we let cutting remarks from people who know us the least hurt us. Corrections by fools is basically folly. Take a look at Proverbs 16. Proverbs 16 and in verse 22. Understanding is a fountain of life to the one who has it, but the discipline of fools is folly. When fools try to correct, all they produce is more foolishness. Because all that comes out of their mouth is foolishness. In Proverbs 15 and verse 2, the tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable, but the mouth of fools spouts folly. It's so prevalent, it's down to the very core of the person. In Proverbs 12 and verse 23, a prudent man conceals knowledge, but the heart of fools proclaims folly. It's right down in the very heart of the person. And yes, somehow it's the lady on her fifth husband who says to you that you're going about your marriage all the wrong way. And worse, some listen. Take a look at Ecclesiastes, chapter 10. Ecclesiastes chapter 10 and verse 12. Words from the mouth of a wise man are gracious, while the lips of a fool consumes him. The beginning of his talking is folly, and the end of it is wicked madness. The more the fool says, the worse it gets. Now, my friend's case, you know, the source of his criticism wasn't admirable. It wasn't someone who was worthy of heeding. The man had not served as a preacher, and yet somehow he knew better than the preacher what his job ought to be. In Matthew chapter 7, Matthew 7 and verse 15. Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. You will know them by the fruits. Grapes are not gathered from thorn bushes, nor figs from thistles are they. So every good tree bears good fruit, but every bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot produce bad fruit, nor can a bad tree produce good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. So then, you will know them by their fruits. The young man that was trying to criticize my friend, he didn't know. He was said he was confused on how to determine what congregation is good and which one's bad. Is that a good fruit? If he was out bringing in the lost to Christ, then it would be worth hearing his advice. But he doesn't attend a faithful congregation. He didn't even attend faithfully. He hadn't been a full or part-time preacher, yet he took it upon himself to tell a preacher that he wasn't doing his job. But typically, it's the sinner who shoots the messenger. You expect people who don't want to hear the message to attack and criticize the person who makes them look bad. Take a look at Matthew chapter 10. Matthew chapter 10 and verse 25. It is enough for the disciple that he becomes like his teacher, and a slave like his master. If they call the head of the house Beelzebub, how much more will they malign the members of his household? Therefore, do not fear them, for there is nothing concealed that will not be revealed, nor hidden that will not be made known. What I tell you in the darkness, speak in the light, and what you hear whispered in your ear, proclaim on the housetops. Do not fear those who kill the body, but are unable to kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. So before you take criticism, understand all of us need to be criticized. All of us need rebuke. But before it ruins your day, think about the source. Think about where it's coming from. Is it trying to improve you or trying to tear you down? Is it trying to get you closer to God, or is it going to cause you to get further from God? And I hope you'll think about these things. There's an opportunity this evening. If there's anyone who wishes to become a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. And for those who are children of God, would like the prayers of your brother on behalf. Why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song of Selected.